She'll be wearing red pajamas. She'll be wearing red pajamas. She'll be wearing red pajamas when she comes. Approaching the outskirts of the crowd, Fish and Chips saw a group of musicians who were obviously English from their dress and hairstyle. Their name, he saw on the biggest drum, was Calculated Tedium, and the guitar player had a canteen strapped to his hip. He reminded 00005 of how thirsty he was, and he asked,
"Pardon me, do you know where I could get some water or a soft drink?"
"Take a snort from me canteen,"
the guitarist said affably, passing it over. He pointed to the west.
"See that geodesic plywood dome there? It's a bleeding giant Kool-Aid station set up by the Kabouters, and guaranteed to hold out even if the crowd doubles inside before this is over. I just filled the canteen from there, so it's fresh. You can get more over there any time you need it."
"Thanks,"
00005 said warmly, taking a long, cold, delightful swallow. He had a very low threshold for LSD. The world began to seem brighter, stranger, and more colorful within only a few minutes. The Joker was actually Rhoda Chief, the vocalist who sang with the Heads of Easter Island, and who had inspired much admiration in the younger generation, and much horror in the older, when she named her out-of-wedlock baby Jesus, Jehovah, Lucifer, Satan, Chief. A former processing and Scientologist, currently going the Wicca route, the buxom Rhoda was renowned through showbiz for giving head like no chick alive, a reputation which often provoked certain Satanists on the Linda Lovelace for President Committee to send very deadly vibes in her direction, all of which bounced off due to her Wicca shield. She was also possibly the greatest singer of her generation, and firmly believed that most human problems would be solved if the whole world could be turned on to acid. She had been preparing for the Ingolstadt Festival for several months, buying only the top quality tabs from the most reliable dealers, and she had crept into the geodesic Kool-Aid station only a few minutes earlier, dumping enough pure lysergic acid diethylamide to blow the minds of the population of a small country. Actually, the idea had been subtly planted in her consciousness by the leader of her Wakan, an astonishingly beautiful woman with flaming red hair and smoldering green eyes, who had once played a starring role in a black mass celebrated by Padre Pederastia at 2323 Lakeshore Drive. This woman called herself Lady Velcor and often made jokes about her memories of 18th century Bavaria, which Rhoda assumed were references to reincarnation. On April 10th, while Howard made his discovery in the ruins of Atlantis and Tlaloc grinned in Mexico, DF, Tobias Knight, in his room at the Hotel Pan Creston in Santa Isabel, concluded a broadcast to the American submarine in the Bight of Biafra.
"The Ruskies and Chinks have completed their withdrawal. And General Isumo Puta is definitely friendly to our side, besides being popular with both the Booby and the Fang. My work is definitely finished. I'll await orders to return to Washington."
"Roger. Over and out."
Frank Sullivan, capitalizing on his only real asset, was operating in Havana as a Cuban Superman, using the name Papa Piaba, when the Brotherhood spotted his resemblance to John Dillinger.
"Gosh,"
he said when they made the offer.
$5,000 just to take two ladies to a movie one night. And it's only a practical joke, you say?"
"It'll be a very funny joke,"
High Capo Mocenigo promised him. And the Smithsonian acquired Mr. Sullivan's asset as one of their most interesting relics. We'll kill the old red rooster. Hagbard was accompanied by Joe Malik when he returned to the stateroom.
"You go to the beer hall in Munich,"
he was saying,
"and steal any item, anything at all, as long as it's obviously old enough to have been there the night he tried the push. Then you rejoin the rest of us in Ingolstadt. Understood?"
We'll kill the old red rooster. Lady Velcor, wearing a green peasant blouse and green hot pants, looked around the geodesic Kool-Aid dome. A man in a green turtleneck sweater and green slacks caught her eye, and she walked over to him, asking,
"Are you a turtle?"
"You bet your sweet ass I am,"
he answered eagerly, and so she had failed to make contact, and owed this oaf a free drink also. But she smiled pleasantly and concealed her annoyance. "We'll kill the old red rooster when she comes."
Robinson and Lehrman of the Homicide Department actually started the last phase of the operation. I was in New York to see Hassan I. Sabah X about a new phase of Laotian opium operation. I had just come from Chicago after staging that conversation with Waterhouse for Miss Cervix's benefit, and I decided to check with them for those little nuances that can't go into an official report. We met in Washington Square and found a bench far enough from the chestnuts to give us some privacy.
Muldoon is onto us,
Robinson told me right off. He was wearing a beard. I figured that meant he was currently in a Weather Underground group, since he was too old to pass for under 21 and get into Morituri. Are you sure? I asked. He made the usual reply.
Who's ever sure of anything in this business? But Bonnie is pure cop through and through,
he added.
And his instincts are like dowsing rods. Everybody on the force knows we've infiltrated them by now, anyway. They even make jokes about it. Who's the CIA man in your department? That kind of thing.
Muldoon is on to us, all right,
Lehrman agreed.
But he's not the one I worry about.
Who is? I brushed my walrus mustache nervously. Being the first pentuple agent in the history of espionage was starting to grind me down. I really wasn't sure which of my bosses should hear about this, although the CIA certainly had to be told, since for all I know, Robinson and Lehrman might be reporting to them twice, having another contact as a failsafe check on my own integrity.
The head of Homicide North,
Lehrman said.
An old geezer named Goodman. He's so damn smart, I sometimes wonder if he's a double agent for the Eye themselves. His mind jumps ahead of facts, just like an adeptus exemptus in the Order.
I looked up at the statue of Garibaldi, remembering the old NYU myth that he would pull his sword the rest of the way out of the scabbard if a virgin ever walked through Washington Park. Tell me more about this Goodman, I said.
Ah, check out the pair on that chick,
a Superman said enthusiastically.
Watermelons,
a second Superman agreed enthusiastically.
And you know how us colored folk dig watermelons,
he added, licking his lips.
Skin,
the first cried.
Skin,
the second agreed. They slapped palms, and Clark Kent came out of his reverie. Having sampled the Kool-Aid a while earlier, he was beginning to float a little, although not yet aware of what was happening. He just felt a rather unusual tug of memory from his days as an anthropologist, and was deeply concerned with a new insight about the relationship between the Black Virgin of Guadalupe, the Greek goddess Persephone, and his own sexual proclivities. And he came out of it with a start, looking at the woman whose breasts had inspired such reverence.
Son of a bitch,
he said piously, his mouth spreading in a grin.
Rebecca Goodman left the house at 3 p.m., hauling a shopping cart and walking past the garage. The nearest supermarket was a good 10 minutes on foot, and big enough to keep her busy for a half hour finding what she wanted and getting through one of those checkout lines. I slipped out of the car and walked right to the back of the house, perfectly secure from neighboring eyes in my Bell telephone overalls. The kitchen door had an easy slip lock, and I didn't even need my keys. A playing card did the job, and I was in. My first thought was to head for the bedroom. The old man from Vienna was right, and that's where you'll find the real clues to a man's character. But one chair in the kitchen stopped me. The vibes were so strong that I closed my eyes and psychometered it, according to the difficult third alco of the AA. It was Rebecca herself. She had sat there and thought about shooting heroin. It faded fast before I could read what had stopped her. The bedroom almost knocked me over when I found it. Who would have thought the old man had so much hot blood in him? I paraphrased, backing out. It was a profanation to read too much in there, and what I did scan was enough. As Miss Mao would say, this man was Dao Yin, beta prime in the terminology of the Eye. No wonder Robinson kept talking about his intuition. The living room had a statue of the Mermaid of Copenhagen that stopped me. I read it and chuckled. Lord, the hang-ups we all have. One wall was a built-in bookcase, but Rebecca seemed to be the reader in the family. I started scanning experimentally and found Saul's vibes on a shelf of detective stories and a Scientific American anthology of mathematical and logical puzzles. The man had no concept of his own latent powers and thought only in terms of solving riddles. Sherlock Holmes without even the violin and the dope for relief from all that cortical activity. Everything else went into his marriage, that hothouse bedroom upstairs. No,
there was a sketch pad on the coffee table. His, according to the aura. I flipped pages rapidly, all detailed, precise, perfectly naturalistic. Mostly faces, criminals he had dealt with professionally, all touched with a perception and compassion that he kept out of his work hours. Trees in Central Park, nudes of Rebecca, adoration in every line of the pencil. A surprising face of a black kid with some Harlem slum building in the background. Another touch of unexpected compassion. Then a switch. The first abstract. It was a Star of David, basically, but he had started adding energetic waves coming out of it, and the descending triangle was shaded. Somewhere in the back of his head, he had been working out the symbolism and coming amazingly close to the truth. More faces of obvious criminal types. A scene in the Catskills with Rebecca reading a book under a tree. Something wrong. Gloom and fear in the shading. I closed my eyes and concentrated. The picture came in with a second woman. I opened my eyes, sweating. It was his first wife, and she had died of cancer. He was afraid of losing Rebecca, too, but she was young and healthy. Another man. He thought she might leave him for a younger man. Well, that was the key, then. I flipped a few more pages and saw a unicorn, some more of the unconscious work that went into that erotic Star of David. A quick scan of Rebecca's books, then. Mostly anthropology, mostly African. I took one off the shelf and held it. Eros again, thinly sublimated. The other part of the key. As Hassan I. Sabah X once remarked to me, breathes there a white woman with soul so dead, she never yearned for a black in her bed? I returned everything to its place carefully and headed for the back door. I stopped in the kitchen to read the chair again, since relapse is as much a part of the syndrome in heroin addiction as in black lung disease. This time I found what stopped her. If I say love, I'll sound sentimental, and if I say sex, I'll sound cynical. I'll call it pair bonding and sound scientific. Slipping back into my car, I checked the time elapsed. 17 minutes. It would have taken several hours to unearth as many facts by ordinary detection methods, and they would have been different, less significant facts. AA training has certainly made all my other jobs easier. There was only one remaining problem. I didn't want to kill anybody at this point, and a bombing would only get Muldoon in. Even having Malik disappear might only bring in missing persons. Then I remembered the dummies used by the clothier on the 18th floor, right above the confrontation office. Burn the dummy just right before setting the bomb, and it might work. I drove back toward Manhattan whistling, "Ho, ho, ho, who's got the last laugh now?"
The bomb went off at 2:30 a.m. 1 week later. Simon, leaving O'Hare Airport, where it was 1:30 a.m., decided he still had time to get to the friendly stranger and meet that cute lady cop who had so cleverly infiltrated the nameless anarchist horde. He could get her into bed easily enough, since female spies always expect men to reveal secrets when they're in the dreamy afterglow with their guard down. He would teach her some sexual yoga, he decided, and see what secrets she might slip. But he remembered the midnight conference at the UN building after the bomb was set and Malik's grim words.
"If we're right about this, we might all be dead before Woodstock Europa opens next week."
"Are you a turtle?"
Lady Velcor asks again, approaching another man in green.
"No,"
he says.
"I have no armor."
She smiles as she murmurs,
"Blessed be."
And he replies,
"Blessed be."
Doris Horace heard the voice behind her say,
"And how's the Miskatonic Messalina?"
And her heart leaped, not believing it, but when she turned, it was him, Stack.
"Jesus,"
one Superman said to another.
"Does he personally know all the good-looking white chicks in the world?"
The Senate and the people of Rome were still tussling with Attila and his Huns, but Hermes Speed King Trismegistus, drummer with the credibility gap, watched placidly from only a few feet away, seeing them as a very complicated, almost mathematical ballet. He was concerned only with determining whether they illustrated the eternal warfare of Set and Osiris, or the joining of atoms to make molecules. He knew he was on acid, but what the hell, that must have been the Kool-Aid, another of Tile Eulenspiegel's merry pranks.